Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Diego was an adorable 7-year-old when he came into Dr. Nadine Burke Harris's medical clinic in San Francisco. Now, I say Diego was 7, but Dr. Burke Harris says he looked like he was 4. He was small for his age. A cutie and a shorty is how Dr. Burke Harris remembers it. Now, Diego had been sent to her by his school nurse, an ADHD evaluation. And Burke Harris wasn't sure that the little boy had ADHD, but he definitely had other problems. Wheezing, maybe asthma, eczema, and of course, a failure to grow. Diego's mother understandably wanted her son to get better. He's not doing well in school, she told the doctor. So what medicine does he need? Well, then Dr. Burke Harris asked Diego's mother a critical question. When did these problems begin? It unleashed the tragic truth. When Diego was 4, his parents took in a tenant, a family friend, who had sexually abused Diego, and his mother did not know about it until one day when she came home and found the man in the shower with her son. The little boy's condition, his suffering, was just like so many others that Burke Harris had seen in her clinic. And she writes, I believed ever since we'd opened the clinic in 2007 that something medical was happening with my patients that I couldn't quite understand. Well, it turns out that that something is severe childhood trauma, trauma that can cause physical changes in the brain, the body, and in a person's deepest biology in very harmful ways. Well, Dr. Burke Harris has since dedicated her career to clinical methods to prevent and possibly reverse the health effects of childhood trauma, and she writes about it in her remarkable book, The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity, and she joins us right now in the studio. Dr. Nadine Burke Harris, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, good afternoon.
Well, I wanted to start out with the story of Diego that you tell in the book, because it's early in the book and it just stopped me in my tracks. Can you tell us a little bit more about him and what it was that kind of opened your eyes to this whole new way of looking at childhood health?
It really was not just Diego, but many patients that I had seen over the time since I opened my clinic in a very underserved neighborhood of San Francisco mm-hmm. called Bayview Hunters Point. And with Diego in particular, I think it was really the combination of events, the fact that his physical presentation was so striking that he was 7 years old and yet his height was the mean for a 4-year-old. Mm. And looking together with his physical examination, his presentation, and then this history of adversity,
Yeah. It
really for me started this deeper question of how is it that what my patient has experienced is affecting his developing brain and body?
Yeah. And then not long after that, you were shown this really pivotal study that you said like it's basically changed the trajectory of your career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My colleague, I was working in my clinic with a psychologist, Dr. Whitney Clark, and we had been just noodling over these really challenging patients for some time, working shoulder to shoulder. And he had heard my suspicions that there was something going on more deeply with our patients. And so he brought me this research study called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. And that completely changed my clinical practice.
I mean, what did the study find?
So the study was done by the CDC and Kaiser Permanente, and in it they asked 17,500 adults about their histories of 10 categories of what they called adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs.
And we're talking about serious adversities, right?
Yes. Yeah. These include things like physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, physical or emotional neglect, or growing up in a household where a parent was mentally ill, substance dependent, incarcerated, where there was parental separation or divorce, or domestic violence. And what the study found were two things that were really striking. One, adverse childhood experiences are incredibly common.
Yeah.
Two-thirds of their population had at least one ACE, and one in eight individuals had four or more of the 10 ACEs. But the other thing that they found that was really striking was that there was a dose-response relationship between these ACEs and health outcomes. So the higher your ACE score, the worse your health outcome.
Wow. And I mean, we're talking serious health outcome, potential health outcomes, right? Suicidality, you said, was 12 times more likely, things like that?
Yes. In the original ACE study, what they found was that individuals who had four or more adverse childhood experiences had double the risk for heart disease, double the risk for cancer, 2.5 times the risk for stroke, 4.5 times the risk of depression, and 12 times the risk of ever attempting suicide.
Now, I understand that there was some medical skepticism to this study, you know, because it was largely reliant on people self-reporting experiences they had had. And so I suppose parts of the medical community said, we're not sure exactly what sort of hard conclusions to draw from it. But I just wanted to express that there was some pushback to that. But for you specifically, when you read this, I mean, were you kind of wondering, why isn't everybody talking about this? Like, because it seemed rather, the way you write about it, it seems rather revelatory to you.
It was absolutely revelatory to me. But part of the reason for that is because I read the study 10 years after it was originally published.
Yeah.
And in the intervening decade, science has filled in the gaps of how early adversity leads to long-term changes in our brains and bodies.
Yeah. So can we talk specifically about some of that science? Because it is both disturbing but utterly fascinating as well. Because there are things like, for example, let's go straight to the level of DNA.
Okay.
Right? Because there are studies now, there's an NIH study at least, that said that this process called DNA methylation in children can be strongly affected by childhood, or affected, I shouldn't say strongly, affected by childhood adversity.
That's absolutely right. So, you know, back in the day, scientists used to kind of argue, which is it? Is it nature or is it nurture? Is it our genetics or is it our environment? And the past several years of science has really put that question to bed. It is nature via nurture. Our environment shapes the way our DNA is read and transcribed. And one of the ways that this happens is that when you're exposed to adversity, it releases stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, and high levels of stress hormones can affect DNA methylation.
Mm-hmm.
And DNA methylation is a way in which our body just puts a signal on our DNA and tells our DNA reading mechanisms whether or not it should read a lot of the following segment or just a little or keep it silent and so if you think about it, it makes a ton of sense that in order to be able to respond to our environments efficiently, we can't wait to change the genetic code to hand it down from parent to child. We need efficient ways for parents to be able to signal their child's biology about, you know, how they need to respond to their environments.
I mean, I imagine, though, that just placing some further scientific rigor on this, do we know for sure, though, that those effects on DNA methylation are leading to some of the adverse health effects that you're talking about that could be caused by intense childhood trauma?
Yes, the evidence is very strong.
Okay.
Yes, the evidence is strong that what we see when there are changes with DNA methylation is that affects the way our different genes are expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those genes are for example, the receptors in our brain that determine whether or not we're highly stress responsive or whether we are less stress responsive, right?
Okay.
So whether we're highly reactive to stress or not. But it also affects whether our immune system releases more inflammation or less when we're faced with a stressor. Right. And so these chronic changes lead to long-term changes in health outcomes.
So then one sort of level up physiologically, there's also major changes that can happen in the brain, right? Prefrontal cortex, you talk a lot about, which is really vital for emotional regulation, things like that, right?
Yes, it's very important for executive function.
Yeah, executive function.
Mm-hmm. And what we see is that when we're exposed to a stressor, right, it activates something called our fight or flight response. Our bodies release high levels of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, and these hormones have activity on different parts of our brain, right? One part of the brain that is activated is the amygdala, the brain's alarm center. And you can imagine that if you're walking in a forest and you see a bear, right? If you were to think about whether you're going to fight that bear, it probably wouldn't be a very good idea. You don't want that to be a time for you to be contemplating whether or not you want to engage.
Right.
You just want to be reacting because you have to save your life. And so the amygdala actually sends neurons, brain cells, to the prefrontal cortex and turns down its functioning when the stress response is activated.
So given that there seems to be very strong evidence that you're talking about, that there are biological changes in children when they're exposed to a lot of trauma, how has that changed your practice as a physician? Like, I guess my other, what I'm really trying to get to is what do you think we can do? What can doctors do to undo that?
So it's changed not only my practice, but also my career, because one of the most important things that we know when we're faced with a public health crisis, and make no mistake, this is a public health crisis. We're talking about 2/3 of Americans exposed, 1 in 8 Americans with 4 or more ACEs, and major health consequences. One of the most important things that we can do, step one, is raising awareness. And that is why I wrote The Deepest Well, is so that folks can be armed with this information and we can generate the political will to make the changes in our society to be responsive. But step two is also doing early detection.
Mm-hmm.
All of the science tells us that the earlier we intervene, the better off children are, the more tools that we have to take advantage of. But in order to intervene early, you have to detect it early.
Yeah.
And right now, only 4% of pediatricians in the United States are screening for adverse childhood experiences. That has to change.
I mean, so what does that look like in a doctor's office? Is it asking a different set of questions? I mean, how early upstream do you do that? Because I mean, pediatricians are already very, very hard pressed to have to cover and talk about so many things. I've been a ton of pediatrician appointments with my kids. There's a lot of ground that you have to cover already.
Oh my goodness, there is so much that we have to cover, and that's why the Center for Youth Wellness, my organization, mm-hmm. developed a screening tool for adverse childhood experiences that can be done in 3 minutes or less. And it actually, what we do is that we ask parents not which of the 10 adverse childhood experiences their child has been exposed to, but only how many,
I see.
And that helps us understand very quickly whether this patient is at low risk, moderate risk, or high risk, and get them the interventions necessary.
And so can these effects be undone, I guess? I mean, or does it take years to see if a difference has been made? Because by the time you're doing the screening, right?
Yes.
If someone says yes to any of those questions, that means something has already happened.
That's exactly right. But what we see is that that these effects can be undone. And in fact, there was recently a study that revealed that for children who had high doses of adversity, there was a randomized control trial who were placed into high quality nurturant caregiving. When we looked at MRIs of their brains, their MRIs were more similar to children who had never been maltreated than children who had been maltreated but didn't get the high-quality nurturing caregiving. So what that shows is that we actually have the capacity to normalize brain function, right? But the early intervention, I think, is really important.
Yeah. So as you know, the New Yorker did a profile of you, and I was reading through it, and it mentions the work of Dr. Jack Shonkoff here at Harvard, who's doing a lot of work in this exact same area. And he talked about how this understanding of the biological changes that trauma can induce in a person is really, he called it like a revolution in biology. And it's a really exciting opportunity to bring biology into early childhood medicine and policy more broadly. But you also gave a TED Talk a couple of years ago. And at that time, it was 2013, 2014, something like that?
Yes, 2014.
At that time, you talked about how you were a little surprised that not everyone in the medical community immediately was on board with this and that you felt like you had to start a movement. So what was going on then?
Well, I think one of the big challenges is that although the science is out there, number one, not everyone knows about it. Number two, myself, when I came across this research, I could read the scientific papers, but as a busy practicing clinician, I did not have standardized protocols of what I should do. And we can't ask every clinician to invent, the wheel to solve this. And our center, the Center for Youth Wellness, launched last year a national pediatric practice community on ACE screening to be a virtual center of learning for any doctor or child-serving clinician around the country who wants to be part and learn together about how to screen for adverse childhood experiences can just go to nppcaces.org and join our national pediatric practice community and learn about how to do this work.
Well, we have just about 40 seconds here left to go, and I can't stop thinking about Diego, about that little boy. I mean, can you tell us what happened to him?
I can, yes. Okay. Yes. So Diego is still a patient of mine. And over the years, we have seen significant improvements in his health. We've stabilized a lot of his, his asthma, his eczema, and his behavior. He's done, as well as his learning. But Diego lives in the community with the highest homicide rate in the city of San Francisco. And things keep happening. And that is why it's so important for us to build this infrastructure into every segment of our society.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Nadine Burke Harris is the founder and CEO of the Center for Youth Wellness in San Francisco. Her new book is The Deepest Well, Healing the Long-Term Effects of Childhood Adversity. Thank you so very much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.